Cisco is pleased to present part three of a panel discussion series, the Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability Series on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's topic is mobility. Here is your host, Tom Temin.
And welcome to the panel. Our panelists today are Casey Coleman. She's the CIO of the General Services Administration, joining us by telephone, and Robert Carey, Deputy CIO of the Defense Department. Chad Tompkins, Acting Director of IT Policy at the Consumer Product Safety Commission. And Gerald Charles, Jr., Executive Director and Global Lead for Workforce and Workplace Sustainability at Cisco Systems. Great to have you all join us this morning. And I want to get right to it. Our topic today is mobility. And, of course, mobility is in some ways as old as the government. We had the Pony Express at one time, but I don't think that's what we're talking about today. I'd like to go around first with the government panelists and get an idea of what are some of the latest mobility applications that you are deploying and why. And why don't we start with Casey Coleman?
Well, with the winter weather we've been having, mobility is more timely than ever. Mobility in the General Services Administration is anytime, anywhere access to your critical business applications and information. We have been deploying tools to support that mission and started with increasing our access through remote access tools like Citrix and Virtual Private Network, VPN technologies. After Snowmageddon last February, we made it fine through that, but we realized we needed to vastly increase our capabilities, so we increased it fivefold. So now we can handle those kind of surges in capacity. We've also put out voice over internet protocol phones so that you have a phone with you at all times, whether it's a handset or a soft phone that runs on your laptop. So with a laptop and a BlackBerry and a soft phone, basically your office is wherever you are.
So there's no escaping whatsoever anymore from GSA.
No, there isn't.
All right, let's move to Rob Carey of Defense Department. And by the way, congratulations on moving to this job recently, and we hope things are going well for you. But mobility is pervasive in DOD. Tell us, what's the new stuff?
Well, Tom, the new stuff is Casey's stuff with a twist, because we're generally all in cahoots with one another. The issue that we have is as you span the gamut of laptops, tablets, down to smartphones, and the applications that run on them, so they're now web-based apps. We have a lot of those out there, whether it's flight line maintenance, whether it is aircraft maintenance on aircraft carriers, things like that, several things in the Army that use mobile devices. Our driver is really security. How do I access this thing securely from afar? And as Casey said, we're driving towards what we call an enterprise user concept, where I can access my data from any device, anywhere, at any time around the globe. Casey's might be in CONUS, but ours would be around the globe, and so that's what we're driving for.
Okay, and Consumer Product Safety Commission has been active lately. You've got some new databases deploying. Tell us what's going on mobility-wise for CPSP.
Well, the Consumer Product Safety Commission has an interesting challenge. We're a small and important agency, but we don't have much of a budget to do this kind of stuff. And what we're trying to do is get service out to the citizens. So we had been kicking around an idea with OMB about doing a mobile app to help get recall information out to the consumers at the point of the sale. So if they're in a garage sale, if they're at a thrift store, if they're about to go online, if they're in their kid's room and want to look and see if a product has been recalled, why make them go all the way back to the computer to go on a website and look that information up? The other problem we had that we wanted to tackle is that there are many different agencies that issue recalls for different reasons. Why should a consumer need to go to National Highway Traffic Safety Administration for a licensed motorcycle for a recall and then come to us for an off-road, a dirt bike, to see if it's been recalled? So we wanted to put all that data together, make it portable, and get it out to the consumer. And Vivek Kundra kicked off this project in March of 2010, and by August we had it launched. And it was pretty exciting.
So you're bringing together information from other agencies other than your own into one place so that the consumer doesn't have to figure out the federal government plumbing to find out about a particular product?
Exactly. And actually, GSA did the development for the application, and we were sort of the lead agency to try to, because we have so much data and it covers so many different products. And all the other agencies came in and brought their data as well, and we're very happy with the product that came out.
So let me just postulate, if I understand the way you're explaining this. If I'm a consumer and I go to a yard sale and I see a crib and I need that crib, I can check to see if that's one of those bad recalled ones that, you know, has the doors that fall off and that kind of thing. That can be done by mobile means by a consumer.
Exactly.
Right. Sounds good. Sounds pretty cool. And let's move to Gerald Charles of Cisco. Now, you have the view across all the federal agencies in your work in the public sector there. What are the mobility trends that you are seeing?
Well, thank you and Happy New Year to everybody. The answers that our panelists just gave really highlight mobility is more than just about being where you are. You heard issues about accessing not just information, but people, places, and things, accessing our teams. So we're really seeing mobility as something that cuts across culture, cuts across policy, as well as about technology. And then how do we use that as everyday citizens, as everyday workers, or in our workplaces or workspaces, no matter where they are. So all of that is what we're seeing and how we're rolling those types of capabilities and those types of concerns into the set of solutions that are being delivered. And as you heard the panelists say, from each of their perspectives, they're also looking at that as the capabilities and requirements that they need, you know, to build out their services.
And let's talk about devices for a minute, because it's hard to talk about mobility without devices. And recently there was the Consumer Electronics Show and dozens of new devices from vendors that weren't even part of the popular thinking when you thought about mobile devices. And the form factors are changing too. Tablets and pads of all sizes and shapes, plus the many, many types of phones coming out. What are you finding that is the device of choice? Rob, let's start with you.
Well, Tom, the device of choice, again, is driven by the security model for Department of Defense, which right now is the RIM device, BlackBerry. However, the other devices, and there are a plethora of smartphones and now you might call tablets, smart tablets, that are coming on the scene, that we'd like to see how they fit into our operational model, see how we can conduct transactions online and realize the ability of accelerating decisions because we keep our workforce connected. So right now we're driven by security, and we will continue to be driven by security. So that will require industry's assistance to help build a security model, the technologies that meet our security model.
So right now that's the most secure device, the one you mentioned, but you believe the other ones could be securable, but you have to get together with industry and do it in a way that's mill grade.
The keystone of our security paradigm is around PKI and our smart cards. And so if we can't use S/MIME to encrypt transactions and transmissions from the device, then I don't want to say it's of no service to us, but it's outside the model.
And it's not something you can use as an enterprise device, in other words, at that point.
That's correct.
Okay. And Casey, at GSA, you have that sort of a government-wide view also. What is going on in the device world?
I agree with Rob. It's really driven by security. It's also driven by compliance, because some of the newer devices may not be compliant with laws such as the Trade Agreement Act. That being said, however, we're really looking at virtualization, not only server virtualization, but desktop virtualization, to push our critical information and applications off the device and into a GSA cloud, if you will, and get the information off the devices so we can use a wider variety of tablets, smartphones, netbooks, and so forth. We still need the two-factor authentication just like the DoD does. But for us, we're looking at virtualization as a way to maybe give ourselves access to a broader array of devices in the long term.
Now, you're at the opposite end of things from the contract people at GSA, being the CIO. But do you get an inkling from them, or do you watch what's going by in terms of what the federal government as a whole is demanding from schedule holders, for example, for the kinds of devices that seem to be growing in popularity?
I think there's an enormous demand for the newer devices, and we're all working through those issues of compliance and security and access, and making sure that we're doing it in a way that's prudent for our mission and for the taxpayer.
Okay.
Yeah, and the demand is there, that's for sure.
You bet. Plus, those new devices are a lot of fun. Besides,
they are.
I mean, we all like to play with them.
Mm-hmm.
And Chad, at Consumer Products, device-wise, are you agnostic that way in terms of the deployment of those databases that you mentioned?
Well, we have two challenges. Internally, we have customers who will look at the Consumer Electronics Show and come back and say, why can't I put my iPad on the network? And that's always a challenge to explain NIST standards and everything else. Plus, we don't really have the resources to try to secure that. So there's a lot of chatter among the small agencies about who's been able to get one technology or another onto their network, and we're sort of waiting for someone to figure it out, and then we'll say, great, then we'll go steal whatever lesson you learn and apply it in our network. So the small agencies tend to follow along behind the larger ones. On the other side, out in the consumer environment, we can't sit around and support older technology. We have to use whatever the market demand calls for. So when we did this app, we did a quick market survey and found no recall apps in the Android area, and also saw that growing substantially over time. So we went into that so we wouldn't have to compete with other developers, compete with the private sector, and try to launch an example of an idea of what the government could do. After we've done that, we've now made the API available so the other developers can take that over and commercialize it and do better stuff with it than we can imagine. So we have to follow along and figure out what's going on out in the commercial world.
And Gerald, I wanted to ask you, from the perspective of Cisco, you develop the infrastructure that supports a lot of these devices. Does Cisco look at what's happening in the device market and say to themselves, what might this mean for what we have to do for people building the backbone and the infrastructure supporting all that? What do you see from that perspective?
Most certainly. In fact, Rob really hit it on the head, where you've got a lot of things and devices, but how do you really support that, and how do you really support that in a secure environment? So we've got a growing theme where we're really focusing on the same experience on any X. So any device, any person, anything, anywhere. So that pulls into place, as Casey mentioned, what happens in terms of providing, say, cloud-based services and virtualization. It pulls into play what Rob mentioned in terms of having a secure device and secure communications and collaboration between them. And it pulls into place also what Chad had talked about in terms of the applications themselves. So we've really been moving forward and driving and providing an infrastructure that can do that, as well as devices themselves. In fact, we have the CS tablet, which is coming out, which is really an enterprise class, business class tablet, specifically, you know, for the business market.
So it's flat on the bottom. It doesn't curve and swing around like some of those tablets.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I guess that leads to the basic question. Again, from your point of view, mobility itself, the definition probably needs to expand a little bit.
It does, because it's really as much about where you are at any point in time, as well as being able to access all the things that you need to access. Again, going back to the people, places, and things. In today's world, you interface with lots of people all over the place. You know, it is a team. We work together more often than we work individually. That could be anywhere, whether you're in the office, in the building, at home, at your supplier, you know, at your customer. And it could be with any different form factor. One day it might be a CS tablet. Another day it might be your smartphone. Another day it might be your desktop. So all of those are part of the definition, or frankly, the strategy of mobility. And that also then pulls into place policy, you know, inclusive of security, as well as the culture of how you do business. Casey had mentioned, you know, Snowmageddon last year. A lot of that really put pressure on a number of agencies in terms of their policy and how they were going to allow people to work. In fact, it really brought into play the evolution from teleworker to mobile worker. And mobile worker really is the thing of today.
You bet. And Casey, I wanted to ask you, too, from an application development standpoint, to deploy applications to mobile devices, they have a different architecture than the standard PC laptops that people have been carrying around for so many years. It's a whole different processor family. They don't look to the application that you might already have built. They don't look like a PC, for example, to the application. So does that incur extra costs and thoughts before you can deploy those applications in a mobile way?
I certainly think it takes a very thoughtful approach. You don't just take an existing application and move it to a mobile platform. It really is a different form factor, a different user mindset, and different capabilities that you can tap into. And there was a reference earlier about GSA doing some mobile application work. That was in our Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies, where they're really focused on helping create innovative new capabilities for the public to tap into government information and services. And we are working working with them to pilot various smartphones in an environment where they can have a laboratory to develop those new capabilities. We're looking internally at mobile app development as well, although right now we're really more focused on making sure the infrastructure and the tools and the devices are there for them.
Yeah, we want to get to that whole infrastructure question because I think it's an important one, but I just wanted to run that question also by Rob in terms of applications and looking different from the point of view of different devices. Does that change how you look at applications and their deployment?
Well, it does to an extent. And again, if I sound like we're parroting each other, that's a good thing. But I agree with Casey. We have to leverage, first of all, what an industry is able to do within the application set that we require to run our business, whatever our business is. So to be consistent with your architecture, to be consistent with the security paradigm of your architecture is really, really important. That being said, for example, once an application is web-based and we can access it through merely a browser, which these smartphones all have, if we can use PKI to get in, I can actually conduct transactions from that device. That is the remaining engineering side that has to be built into it.
Okay, and Chad, we'll follow up with you on the same question, application implications for mobile devices.
Well, internally in our network, we have a lot of remote users out working in the ports, looking at products that are coming in from other countries, or looking at incidents that happen across the country when a consumer reports an issue. And so for a while now, we've been moving our applications to be fairly light on the network for network requirements, if not web-based, very light in the amount of data that they're transmitting. So one of our early uses of mobile technology was just tethering laptops onto BlackBerries so that the worker was out remotely. Maybe they couldn't find Wi-Fi or whatever it was, but they could still get on and get that information rolling through the organization quickly. So that was really important. We've had some demand internally to do things like barcode recognition on products where a laptop can't do that very easily, but if you could put a mobile phone, scan it, and grab that barcode and figure out what it is, and have we seen that before? We're excited to try to tackle that problem, but it's the industry isn't quite ready for that yet.
Okay, well, up next will be infrastructure. You're listening to Cisco's panel discussion on the future of public sector workforce and workspace sustainability. Here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be back in just a moment.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Cisco's panel discussion on the future of public sector workforce and workplace sustainability here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin. Our panelists today are Casey Coleman, CIO of the General Services Administration, Robert Carey, Deputy CIO of the Defense Department, Chad Tompkins, Acting Director of IT Policy at the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and Gerald Charles, Jr., Executive Director and Global Lead for Workforce and Workplace Sustainability at Cisco Systems. And we were talking about the outside, so in the first segment, let's talk about the inside now, which is the infrastructure that has to support all of this mobility. And we're going to start with Gerald Charles of Cisco. It's not just a matter of having an application to an iPhone or a BlackBerry. What's required of the infrastructure to be able to support true mobility as we are coming to understand it?
So if you think about some of our discussion today where we talked about the capabilities that are needed for an application, the services that we'd provide, and being aware of where the device is, there's also issues of scalability. You know, how many people and how does this scale up or down? The availability, you know, always on. People always need access to the things. Chad talked about the example of you could even be at a garage sale, and it probably is not going to be during, kind of prime time hours during the week. Security, which I know we'll talk about a lot more, is a major, major issue. Cost that goes along with that, and we certainly are stewards of all of these resources. And then how do we really manage that in an effective way? All of those, you know, are capabilities or requirements that drive what's going to happen in this infrastructure and how we build it out.
Now, Casey Coleman, GSA is moving, I guess, for 5 years or so while your very beautiful but ancient headquarters gets a complete makeover. And so what does this give you the chance to do in terms of infrastructure to support mobility?
We're really using the move as a lab, as a test case to test out some of these concepts on our own headquarters population. And you're right, we will be out of our headquarters building for at least 5 years while it's being renovated. So we are in a new space today. We are at One Constitution Square in a new building. The building's all wired for wireless. So for us, the concept of mobility is not just the teleworker who's working at a home office or outside the building, but it's also the ability to move around the building seamlessly with a laptop or with a smartphone, BlackBerry, and be able to converge in collaborative work groups and be productive in any place in the building and have access to all of your information and tools without being tethered to your desk.
And what does that do to the whole trunk Ethernet that you have? Because you have all these vectors of information coming in that may be spikier than you were used to. What do you have to do to accommodate all that?
It really changes the dynamics of how we architect the network. Obviously, Wi-Fi plays a much bigger role. We're looking at, we've already migrated our network to MPLS, so we have a lot more capacity on demand. That was part of our migration to the network's contract. So we have that capacity, and we can turn it up and down as needed. We're also looking at segmenting our network into trust zones so that we can put more of our systems on the edge. For example, a lot of what we're doing today is about managing our buildings more intelligently with sensor-based IP networks. And so smart buildings and the management of those is a key part of our network strategy.
And Chad, Consumer Product Safety Commission was basically a paper-based agency until recently. And now you have dealings with the public in a much more direct way, as you've described, than it used to be. It was kind of you and industry, and you would hear reports. So what's going on with your first, let's talk about the technical infrastructure to support these new applications you're putting out to the public?
Well, you're right. The historically, the way we interacted with the public was paper in and FOIA request out. And with the change in the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act in 2008, it required us to create this searchable public database of reports of harm that you talked to our public affairs officer about this morning. So we're excited about that technology launching, and it'll change the way we interact with both the public and with industry. So what used to be fax machines and FedEx letters and things like that now turn into PDF attachments on web forms that we talk to the public about. We'll watch that and see what happens. We for records management, we scan everything, PDF it anyway. But now we're getting the folks out generating the initial record to do that work for us, which helps us out quite a bit.
But you see a change in traffic, both in volume and the shape and characteristics of that traffic also?
We are. And since we're, most of our workforce that works with consumers through that nature are in our headquarters building, it's all on an Ethernet network. It's not much on a wide area network. So we don't see a lot of network changes there. But what we see is a large change in volume in that when a consumer can now report on a web form, that's what they want to do. That's what they wanted to do for a number of years now. So instead of filling out a paper form, so we're expecting the volume of transactions to actually bump up quite a bit.
And Rob, you may have the biggest infrastructure of all when you talk about the global information grid, which is thousands of pieces and carriers and networks all over the world. How does mobility in the new style, the 21st century mobile military, what's going on with your infrastructure in that sense?
Well, Tom, you sort of hit the nail on the head. It's all over the world and it's moving. So the thing that's important to us is making sure that you have mobility implies presumed connectivity, whether it's wireless or wired, whether it's around, could be in Naples, Italy, could be in the Horn of Africa, could be in Afghanistan, it could be in Toledo. So at the end of the day, the ability to rely upon that, again, securely, you'll keep hearing me hit that security theme over and over and over again, but it's important for us to recognize that connectivity be present to allow the workers that opportunity to access. I did want to give a shout out to our DISA team for building out the RACE environment, because again, to build out these applications in a consistent environment that allows us to make decisions rapidly, agilely, that reduces the cycle time. Because again, the mobile apps are not as complex. The model that has been introduced by several commercial vendors is beneficial to all of us to get inside that cycle time, to turn out, I think Chad said light apps, but to churn out these applications that can be put on mobile devices and allow the same type of transaction to occur. The engineering that's required back inside the infrastructure has to be accomplished in such a way that it will allow those apps to go through securely.
And just for clarity, we want to mention Race is the cloud environment that this has built for Correct. Application development.
Correct.
And it's gotten a lot of notoriety, too. And Gerald, virtualization has come up in a couple of conversations. People are moving to mobility and simultaneously moving to virtualization of their users and not just virtualization of the data center. Do you find those things are actually related in some way?
Very much so. Because, you know, if you think about virtualization, it's not just focusing on being able to provide, you know, services and data and information kind of anywhere. It's also from anywhere. You know, it's not just from one data center or, you know, or one machine. You have to be able to scale that across a number of machines, which also then drives kind of a cost issue in terms of how do you manage that and how do you manage that part of the infrastructure. It's one of the key reasons why we've really invested in providing significant, you know, kind of cloud-based solutions. But you also have to be able to manage it, you know, as the provider. So all the things that Rob was just saying, you know, globally around the world, that's very serious on the inside as well as the set of services and things that you deliver on the outside. I'd also say the one other point about virtualization is that's just not one thing, you know, kind of a one product or one capability. You really have to understand that this infrastructure is a system or a system of systems. And so the agencies are naturally recognizing you've got to look at solutions and services and provide it in that way versus a one-off, you know, kind of product.
So, but basically what we're doing is separating a person's state from the machine they ordinarily used to use, and the state is somewhere in a safe environment, and the device doesn't keep that state. I mean, that seems like to be the big change here.
Exactly, and it goes back, even the earlier comment I was saying, is it's really about anything, anyone, anywhere, anytime. And we don't really want to talk about a specific individual device or server or things like that. We want to focus on what our business is and be able to deliver that business, whether it's 10 people on at 10 o'clock versus 25 people on at 3 versus 2 on at 8.
And Casey, you mentioned something before about the new ability, the new building rather, where wireless and Wi-Fi play a bigger part. And let's not talk about wireless carriers for a minute, but the Wi-Fi piece of wireless. How does that change how you build, design a building, maybe even lay out people within the building, cubicles and so forth, when Wi-Fi is playing such a bigger part in the computing environment?
That is a really interesting question, and it's really evident by the design of the headquarters building we just left versus the new space we just moved into. In the old building, everyone had an office, or there were offices with doors which had cubicles within them with high partitions. Here in the new building, it's all open. Everyone has cubicles with low walls that is, you know, at eye height when you sit down. They're not 6 or 8 feet tall. There's a lot of open space. So there's planned, you know, lounges where people can sit and work, and there's whiteboards and video conferencing in all of the conference rooms so that you can connect through VTC to colleagues elsewhere. So the whole building has been designed with the thought towards encouraging work groups, encouraging ad hoc collaboration, and encouraging more productive work environment in work groups.
And I'll bet there's even some electrical implications, because some of the access points for Wi-Fi that are in the ceilings or on top of columns, you have to get power to them in places where you wouldn't ordinarily have put a plug in as the architect.
We do. You're correct. And we benefited from the fact that we were involved in the build-out of this building from the beginning. So we were able to construct all that in a way that was advantageous. But going back into some legacy buildings is not a trivial matter. But we've also employed a really smart approach to power management all throughout this building. So the lights automatically go down when the room is not occupied. We have screens on the windows that shade the sun automatically, so it's a little disconcerting. You'll be sitting in a meeting, and all of a sudden the sun goes down on the horizon, and then the shades go down to block the direct sun into the room. So there's a lot of smart features, a lot of technology enablement in this building.
That could give people the wrong idea. Gerald, a comment?
Yes, if I could really add to that, because Casey's highlighting another element of this, and that's smart building. And you're hearing more and more about that. But smart building and smart building design or workplace design is as much influenced by mobility and how organizations mm-hmm. work as anything else, which then also starts directly feeding into sustainability and, green issues. So organizations are focusing more and more on how do they work, not how many people they have and how much square footage that you, give them, but how do they work, when do they work, and then how do we provide a work environment that supports that, recognizing that we move throughout the day so much and even outside the building, and so we're not so much caught in the building. So our buildings need to be much more smarter and react and almost become living organisms themselves.
And this is all about the physical infrastructure, but there's also the human capital infrastructure we should probably talk about. And Rob, as the military moves toward more mobility and different deployments around the world of wireless and mobility, what are the human and intellectual requirements of the people that carry out this work? How's that changing?
Well, it's important to recognize that we're trying to untether people from their desks. And so, again, back to providing them, whether it's a laptop or a tablet or a smartphone, to conduct their work and allow them to access this thing called the network. We don't care where they are. We're actually building in telework plans far more diverse than we had done in the past because the technology supports it. But that being said, when we say mobile worker, we're talking about global. We're not talking about the Washington Beltway, although that's a good example of can somebody work from home, how many days a week. Getting to one of Casey's points, if you have enough people that you've enabled to work at home, and I think Cisco is a good company to represent this, you actually can start to impact the facilities square footage that you require to conduct operations. You can leverage these people from whether it's their homes or other places, and suddenly there is a real live cost savings that is as a result of having mobile information and telecommunications access.
How about the Pentagon itself, just as an aside? I know they've been working on the wedge-by-wedge renovation. I lost track of where they stand now on that. Is that done yet?
We are almost done. I believe it wraps up next year.
Okay, and do the new wedges—
later this year.
Does the way the new wedges came out, did that support some of the things you're trying to do in the Pentagon itself?
Well, for example, most offices like mine, you will check your BlackBerry at the door. There is no devices allowed inside my office because my office is a SCIF. But that being said, we're investigating how can we create the proper sets of Wi-Fi hotspots. Right now, the Pentagon is an amazing anti-hotspot, just because of the way it's built with the limestone and things like that. So it's very difficult to get connectivity unless you're at center court. So at the end of the day, we're working on those kinds of things to allow people access to information that aren't sitting at their desk.
So maybe when the fifth wedge is done, time to start over on wedge one and work your way around again.
I will tell you, each of the wedges are slightly different.
Yeah, well, it's been probably 15 years.
10 years,
okay. Well, anything else on the human side? Chad, what have you found that the human capital requirements are, the human intellectual requirements, as you change the way IT and mobility are deployed at Consumer Products?
Well, echoing off of what Rob was saying is that we want our workers to be mobile. Today with the ICE, I know four of my team members are teleworking. So, the job still gets done even if the weather's inclement. So, the biggest problem is probably just the kids bugging you while you're trying to get something done when you're at home. So also we talked about continuity of operations. A while back, we moved all of our users to laptops, and the idea was you improve your productivity. If something comes up, you can take your laptop somewhere else, and we're continuing to implement that so that we can get that to work. The biggest challenge, we've talked about security a number of times, is when something goes mobile, you need to figure out a way to secure it. So when you talk about human capital, the training and procedures and policies around equipment and what happens when they get lost, all that stuff is a very big deal.
And we're going to go into all that in detail, but first we're going to take a short commercial break. You're listening to Cisco's panel discussion on the future of public sector workforce and workplace sustainability here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin. We'll be right back.
Tired of playing catch up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Cisco's panel discussion on the future of public sector workforce and workplace sustainability here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin. Our panelists today are Gerald Charles, Executive Director and Global Lead for Workforce and Workplace Sustainability at Cisco Systems, Chad Tompkins, Acting Director of IT Policy at the Consumer Product Safety Commission, Robert Carey, Deputy CIO at the Defense Department, and Casey Coleman, CIO of the General Services Administration. And a lot of things we were talking about in the prior segment seem to bring elements together in the federal government, HR, building design, IT. Gerald, you said there's a new model emerging. Tell us about that.
Yes, there's really new governance model that's coming from this. And each of Casey, Rob, and Chad talked about this. And that governance model is bringing together our real estate and facilities organization, our IT organizations, and our HR organizations. All of those are playing a role now in how we design our work environments and the associated infrastructure and what those services are that go along with it. Whether it's even just kind of allocation of space, whether it's policy, whether it's how do we actually manage probably the second biggest asset on the books, you know, that being the physical real estate. All those now are coming together in a single governance model driving these decisions.
And that's probably having an effect on the physical environment. I remember when PCs were first deployed and there was no place to put them. So they stuck them on the middle of a desk and there were wires coming down all over the place. And when Ethernet came in, and so I guess we've come a long way from that model.
It has, because as you think about the evolution from the PC to the laptop and then all these different mobile devices, if you think about, as Casey mentioned, even the workspace itself, there's less walls. You think about people move around, you know, the office. So what is somebody's space? How do you get space? How do you reserve space? What is space when you may not be in a building which the organization directly controls, when you could be at home or at customer or supplier? All those things, you know, go into that and are part of this new governance model.
And Chad, so what does that do for the CIO shop, the IT shop? It sounds like it makes it less of just a technical resource and maybe a little bit more strategic partner.
Well, there are sort of different models that an IT shop can serve in an organization. It can support an organization. It can enable them to do things. And in some cases, it can drive things. And what we like to do is collaborate with our agency heads, with the chairman and the commissioner and the executive director. And when they're making a decision, if we can work a little bit in advance of them and say, well, let's see what technology can do for you in that area. That's kind of how it used to work. Now it's more of the politicals coming to us saying, I've got this idea about technology. Let's see what we can do here. And then the technology will then drive some policy change. So the public database that was put into that law that I mentioned earlier in 2008, I mean, there's six pages of the statute that talk about IT requirements, essentially. I've never seen anything like that before. And so when we went to do the new regulation, it was essentially an IT regulation that we ended up putting out. The IT shop took quite a strong role in that capability. So it's been really transformational for us as an IT shop, but more importantly to the commission as technology is being brought in.
And Casey, you must have something to add to that discussion.
Yes, Tom, we created our telework policies about 3 years ago, and so since that time, a lot has changed, both in terms of the role of the IT organization, capabilities in the industry, and so forth. And so we have just created a cross-organizational telework program office to really look closely at all aspects of culture, policy, training, and how we effectively go mobile as an organization. We have a saying here that telework is a team sport. And what we mean by that is that it's if one person in a team is teleworking or is mobile, then everyone needs to be operating differently, because you can't have one person who's sitting on a conference call, everyone else in the room, and the one person who's, you know, mobile that day can't participate fully or effectively if everyone else isn't sensitive to that. So we're looking at, you know, training people in groups and going through workshops as work teams, where there's sort of a joint commitment to the team as to how they're going to work and what sort of tools they're going to employ and how they're going to go mobile together.
I guess the definition of telework has really expanded. It used to be you were home, or preferably you were in a telework center, or you were at the office. Now, as we've said, you know, throughout this morning, anywhere, any place that you want to get something done, any time of day, that's really what telework is.
Yes, absolutely.
And Rob, what about the DOD angle on that whole governance and relationship among different functions?
Well, it's important to recognize that teleworking and mobility has to solve a business problem. Remember, the CIOs and the IT architects and the infrastructure guys build out these solutions to help solve mission problems that anybody's agency or department may have. So that partnership's really important, so that the connection between the work that needs to get done and where the workers may be is built. For example, our electronic health record partnership with VA to get to a place where a doc can walk around with a tablet PC and have at his or her disposal the patient's medical record right there. Okay, now we can do that in spots today, but to do that holistically and then have entries placed back into a database, right? That's really important. So we're closing the gap between the doc and the patient and the record of what the doc and the patient have done with each other. That's a really powerful opportunity. The second piece that's important to recognize about telework is it actually is a fabulous insight on COOP, right? So continuity of operations. You know, if I can exercise my workforce from not at their desks, I'll just say it, not at their desks, and I can conduct and be 50, 60, 70% mission capable, maybe all the way up to 100% mission capable, I've really proven myself to be to have done a very worthy thing. Snowbageddon last year was a test. I think the grades across the federal government would probably vary at best. And I know some people have said we were all at work. Okay, then you've obviously deployed mobile solutions. But again, it is a good testament to the way ahead with COOP.
And let's talk about, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, just to follow up on that and think about kind of where we're going, as we now evolve to a mobile worker, kind of anywhere, any place, any time, an infrastructure that is well-managed, virtualized, and can be able to provide that, it's going to fundamentally change COOP and even the definition of COOP and what it is, because it's not going to matter about when an emergency happens. Our natural state is going to be we can provide services any way, any type, on demand, scale, up or down. You know, COOP will move into a very, very different category. And so it's a very good trend that the industry is moving towards.
And let's talk about cybersecurity, because you really can't talk about mobility without that, with all those devices out there. What is the proper training? What do users need differently or in addition to what they may already know about security practices to make sure that mobility doesn't cause cybersecurity problems? Chad, you want to try that one?
Sure. As a civilian agency, where a lot of the information that we have that's public, one of our goals is to really get the information out. So confidentiality is not a big factor on our public side. Our mobility strategy is to take all that public data and get it out as far to the users as we possibly can, so they can make more informed decisions with their products. That being said, once we've taken information in about an incident and a company may be commenting on it, some of it may be trade secrets, the stuff inside of our network has to be very safe. And so as we talk about mobility strategies, that information needs to be secure. One thing I was thinking about as we were talking is we moved something like from a cell phone or a smartphone to a tablet or a laptop. Things like tablets tend to be sort of left in a coffee shop more than something like a cell phone or a mobile or a laptop. So to me, the big factor is going to be the training of the users as to what to do and what, you know, report it quick, report it early, have the technology to be able to remotely wipe things, you know, that sort of stuff.
And Rob, of course, the military starts with security as the foundational requirement before anything else happens. And what has mobility and the mobile infrastructure and the mobile endpoint done to the way you approach things?
Well, it's interesting that while it is crucial to us to maintain adequate levels of security, security is the antithesis of convenience. So the next step of signing and encrypting an email from your device, the users realize that in their civilian opportunity, their civilian role, they don't have to do that. So we have to balance the training. We have to balance the convenience factor. We have to balance the what I call steps to transparency, right? So the idea of authentication and verification, you know, how do I get to that place where that's pretty simple? Because today it's not. It is more steps. There is more logic behind it that has to be done. You know, when we go buy things online and you want to see your little secure transaction going on, the little lock at the end at the bottom of your screen, you know, setting up a VPN and conducting training on how to do that to actually get in simply is sometimes difficult. But, you know, users are either assets or their vulnerabilities. And so when they're out as a mobile worker, they have to be spooled up and schooled up on how to be an asset and not be the vulnerability.
And Casey, yeah, how do you deploy in the civilian sense enough cybersecurity to be secure, but yet not create such barriers that people try to work around them to get their jobs done? Because I think that's a danger also.
It is. And I really completely concur with what Chad and Rob already said. It is mostly about the user and their awareness and their training and their adherence to good security protocols. But I also go back to the notion of getting the privacy data, getting the personally identifiable and sensitive data off of the devices through virtualization and through thin clients into a cloud. And then you do reduce to some extent the opportunity for compromise, the opportunity for vulnerability. And you also reduce the opportunity for workarounds, but you never completely eliminate that. So the good infrastructure combined with good user training, I think, is our best shot at this.
Now, something Rob said earlier, and that is you have to have a business case for mobility. And while cost reduction can be a business case, often the business case is something having to do with the application itself, better transparency, more interaction with the public, more security, greater national security. Gerald, what does your view, looking across government, across Cisco, what do you find the cost implications are of increased mobility? Over time, does it tend to reduce costs? Is it neutral, or is it something that people have to invest in, or all of the above?
It is all of the above, but 2 points here, which are really interesting. So in this age, you know, of communications and the internet, there are numerous studies and research now that have shown that in terms of time and productivity, we're actually 1/3 to 40% less productive because it takes us time to find the person we want to communicate with and actually find the right telephone number or email address to connect to them with. So we've got all this communications, you know, the ubiquity of communications, all these different devices, but we're having a hard time finding folks. So that's kind of the negative. The positive in what's happening is this is drawing a capability called presence as part of a mobility strategy. And that's really understanding the state and the preferences and location, you know, of who somebody is and where they are before you initiate that call. So now we can flip losing all that time to actually gaining time because we can understand, you know, where somebody is, what type of device that they have, all based upon their preferences and kind of choice up front. So, you know, it's not like we're, you know, 1984 in that world, but we can understand all that the very first time we initiate, you know, contact. So now all of a sudden we can be much more efficient. We can make our decisions quicker and faster as well as be more cost effective.
So that sounds like you're weighing in favor of over time costs are lower because of well-done mobility.
Right, and not just raw cost in terms of dollars, but also cost in time, also cost in terms of improving and speeding decision-making.
And Casey, looking at the new building with all of the ways that you're doing mobile and mobile computing there and experimenting, as you said, with new setups, is the feeling that the infrastructure and computing costs will be less than if you had not done these things, or how are you measuring that?
We are, and I don't know if the IT bill will go down, but I think the business case ROI will go up. So there's a notion of you know, mobile IT, but there's also IT to enable mobility and to, you know, reap productivity benefits in the mission and program areas that might not accrue to the IT bottom line. One of the things we're looking at, I think it was Gerald earlier who said that you can reduce your real estate footprint over time if you employ an effective mobility strategy. So in our headquarters building that's under renovation, when we move back in, we're looking to consolidate GSA's various workforce presence around town. We have several different buildings, not just the headquarters building. If we do that effectively, we will have two people for every one seat in the building. So at any given time, only half of our DC area workforce can fit into that building. And that sounds strange, but it's really not that aggressive. There's a lot of industry firms who are running ratios of 12, 15, 20 people per seat by the use of effective mobility strategies and just taking into account normal workforce swings like people out on leave or on business travel.
And that gets back to that holistic view. And yes. Chad, we're getting close to the end. Comment on cost.
Well, this mobile app is a good example where the six agencies involved all collaborated together. And GSA did the development, and it was put out in a very short amount of time. So we're very excited about the cost side of this. And then as we run this further down the line, the mobility for making the API that we use, the application programming interface, available to the public and let them take the application and do it better than we could is really the differentiator for us.
And Rob, cost implications long term?
Well, I think I agree with Casey. I would not look at the IT infrastructure cost to go necessarily down proportionately. I would actually look for them to maybe change a little bit. But more important is about, and I think Casey's, again, right on, each agency has to have a strategy to harness the mobility to accomplish mission. So that's going to drive what your IT infrastructure is going to look like. And then it's interesting, how do you go measure productivity? If you look back at the IT infrastructure and capture, well, that cost went up, you have to go look back at mission accomplishment, at decision agility, at transaction speeds, and see where those have improved. If they haven't improved, you don't have the right metrics. It's going to be easy to point a finger at, well, I gave you a lot of money for your IT infrastructure and that went up, but I didn't get any benefit from it. It's a different paradigm.
And Gerald, final comment.
Just closing on that, so the cost savings aren't just going to come from one organization. Your IT budget may stay, you know, flat, but you're going to see cost savings across not just IT, but all the other organizations.
Okay, Gerald Charles, Executive Director and Global Lead for Workforce and Workplace Sustainability at Cisco Systems. Chad Tompkins, Acting Director of IT Policy, Consumer Product Safety Commission. Rob Carey, Deputy CIO, Defense Department. And Casey Coleman, CIO, GSA. Thank you all very much for participating. It's been a great discussion.
Thank you for listening to Cisco's panel discussion on the future of public sector workforce and workspace sustainability on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. To hear this show in its entirety and more information, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword work.